Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations tonight. The group in the studio is the Narragansett Bay Symphony Community Orchestra. Actually, the whole orchestra is not here, but Benjamin Vickers is here. He is the music director. Welcome back, Benjamin.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having us again.
Nice to have you with us, and you brought a special guest who is going to be the violin soloist on your performance of March 5th, Jesse Holstein. Welcome, Jesse.
Hey, good to be here.
Nice to have you with us, and we're going to find out everything you ever wanted to know about Jesse. He started out as a child. And
yes,
you did. Where? What town did you grow up in?
I grew up in Western Massachusetts in Amherst, Mass.
Okay.
And my dad was a physics professor there, so I grew up there, and I was lucky enough in the public schools there. They had really good string programs and music programs, and had a fabulous orchestra conductor that was just so supportive, and his name was Patrick Smith. And
so yeah. We're giving a shout out to Patrick Smith.
Yes, right. Yes, absolutely.
So you are a violinist and started playing at about what age?
I started when I was 5, and it's an interesting story because it started with a complete lie. There was a friend of mine, that a girl in my kindergarten class, who brought in a violin for show and tell. And she, I remember, played, I can't remember what she played, but she played a couple of things, probably from the Suzuki books, and she was getting all this attention. And I wanted some of that attention, so I raised my hand and said that we had a violin in our family. I don't remember this, but my mother remembers that I told the teacher that we had an heirloom. I don't think I said the word heirloom, but I said, we have a violin that was my grandfather's. There was no violin. So when I went home that day, I was like, we have to get a violin. And the teacher called saying, is it okay if this precious violin come to the
Stradivarius
yes.
you have in the cellar, yeah.
But luckily in my mom's aerobics class, there was a violin teacher. And so her name was Diana Peely. And so I started taking lessons not long after that, but there was no violin.
And there you go. But that got it all started.
That got it started, yeah.
And you kept with it, obviously.
Yes, yes.
And
yes,
today we can find you in a couple places at the Community Music Works in Providence.
Right, right.
Been there for about how long?
I've been there since 2001, which was the first year that there was a resident string quartet. My colleague Sebastian Ruth started it by himself in 1997. His girlfriend, now wife,
right,
Mina Choi, joined very soon after that. And it was very interesting. When I was in grad school at New England Conservatory, one of my housemates was going down to Providence one day a week to teach at this place. I didn't know what it was, but it turns out to be Community Music Works. And then 2001 was the first year there was a full-time resident quartet. And so I moved there with a friend of mine that I had played in a quartet with at Oberlin. And we both started there in 2001, and I've been there since. And I will be going there right after this.
Oh, what a deal. All right, so we're very glad to have you in Rhode Island. And back to you, Ben. It's been a while since you've been into the studio. Things are going well with the orchestra?
Well, things have been going very well. I think we were last here talking about the Mahler Fourth Symphony performance we did last June.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we've opened the season with an additional concert on September 11th on Sunday, just happened to be that day, at the Weaver Library in East Providence for their opening. And we played an outdoor concert there that went very well and rained right on time, right when we were done. we played a concert on Sunday, October 30th, the day before Halloween, which was kind of a Halloween-themed concert at the newly renovated McVinney Auditorium in Providence. And we had some children coming dressed in costumes, and we played traditional Halloween fare like the Mussorgsky Night on Bald Mountain and Bach's Stokowski Toccata and Fugue of fame from Fantasia. And then we played a piece, two movements from the Berlioz Symphony Fantastique, the final two movements. And we're going to play the whole piece again in June at our final concert on June 4th. So if you didn't hear us do it, then you can come on June 4th and we're going to play the whole piece.
And that'll play catch up. There you go.
That's right.
Now, you did very well concentrating because there's some construction going on in our building. And there's this banging that is not to the rhythm of what we're doing. So I don't know if the audience can hear it. Probably not. But you did a very good job concentrating, not letting that interrupt you.
Thank you.
Yeah. What kind of music did you bring for us today?
Well, we brought one of the selections from the concert I just mentioned, from the Symphonie Fantastique, the March to the Scaffold, which is the fourth movement of that piece. We played the fourth and fifth, and this is the piece where the hero of the Symphonie Fantastique, the sort of narrator in musical terms, has finally escaped his infatuation with someone he's in love with a little substance help, a little bit of help. And he's having a nightmare now where he's killed the beloved figure in the symphony, and he's being executed for her death. And then the fifth movement is a continuation of that dream where he's actually in the bad place downstairs,
down below.
At a Sabbath party of witches who are celebrating his arrival there, and the beloved has in fact become one of the witches. She's transformed, so it's a it fit Halloween well, but this that's its context.
All right, here we go. was music to set our mood, at least. We're now in the mood. And Ben, that was what?
We're in a strange mood. That was the March to the Scaffold from the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique that, again, we're going to play the whole work on June 4th.
Okay.
We had one further concert in the last, you know, last calendar year part of this season, and that was the chamber concert at St. Peter's Church by the Sea in Narragansett on December 11th, and that featured St. Peter's Church's organist, Cheryl Casola, playing the Poulenc Concerto in G minor for organ, strings, and timpani, which was astounding. It's a great instrument they have, and we also played the Brandenburg Concerto No. 5 by Bach, featuring some of the orchestra's own members as soloists. We had Emily Chen, our concert mistress, was the violin soloist. John Curran, the principal flute, was the flute soloist. And we had a guest harpsichordist who we've been wanting to work with for a long time, Jacob Stott. So that all was a very good concert we did as well.
Sounded like it was a great event.
If any of our audience came to any of those concerts and you liked what you heard, tell four friends and have them come to the concert we're here about today and also our season finale on June 4th.
There you go. And if you didn't like it, say it was a New York Symphony. All right.
Right.
Jesse, your involvement in these programs as a soloist, do you get to rehearse or do you just kind of show up the day of the concert?
No, we'll be rehearsing. Yeah, I mean, I like to get as many rehearsals as possible. I mean, I don't get many opportunities to play concertos, but when I do, I come from a chamber music background, and I'd like it to feel as much like chamber music as possible, rather than just, I'm here, follow me. I'd like to work with Ben, I'd like to work with the orchestra, I'd like to, if there's a duet, as there is often with, say, the cello section and the second theme of the first movement, I want to make sure that I'm playing with them. So I as much rehearsals as possible, which is great.
That's a good thing, because sometimes you don't have the opportunity for that. You
right.
Know, you just kind of show up that day and hope for the best.
Yeah, this, I hope, is not that. Yeah.
All right.
No, it won't be. We're actually getting started on the piece, and Jesse's going to be joining us soon for that process. So we're working on the orchestra part at this point.
Okay, great. All right, well, let's move along in the program. What do you have for us musically next? We're going to go to a rather long piece that we'll listen to a portion of.
Right. This is the second movement of the Tchaikovsky violin concerto, which is what Jesse's going to be playing with us. And this is kind of the heart of the work. It's got a lot of my favorite moments in it. And this is a performance by Itzhak Perlman and Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra from the 1980s.
All right, and we are going to get to hear this where on March 5th? Where's the time, place, and everything is happening?
That's going to be at the Smith Center for the Performing Arts at Providence College, and it's March 5th at 3 p.m.
3 o'clock.
That's right.
Providence College. All right, we'll listen to that, take a short break, and be back with more.
Thank you.
We are back on Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, and we're sitting with Benjamin Vicker, the music director of the Narragansett Bay Symphony Community Orchestra. Also, we have Jesse Holstein here, who is a member of the Music Works in Providence, and he is a special soloist coming in playing the violin, not the harmonica. You don't play the harmonica?
I used to.
You had that look about you that you could be a harmonica guy. But we really need some expertise on that piece of music that we just heard before we took our commercial break. Tell us about that.
Yeah, in addition to teaching and playing, I really enjoy reading about pieces, and because they're just real people with real problems. I mean, the music sometimes can feel immortal, but these are definitely mortals. And the genesis of the concerto is pretty interesting. He got married very impulsively in 1877 to a former student. There's many theories why. He barely knew her. Being a gay man in Russia at that time was, complicated, doesn't do it any justice. And they think it was a foil just to let people know,
everything's okay.
Yes.
He's a married guy.
Yeah. Right. But he took off almost immediately, and they never got divorced, but he escaped to town of Clarence, which is next to Lake Geneva in Switzerland, just to recover from this marriage. He had a complete breakdown, and a student of his named Josef Kotek was probably a lover of Tchaikovsky's, came to visit. Kotek had been in Berlin studying with Joachim, but he came and showed up in Lake Geneva with a suitcase of music, and they played through the Lalo Symphony Espagnole. Well, with the Lalo, Tchaikovsky wrote in a letter that Lalo was not striving after anything profound. He was avoiding routine, looking out for new forms, thinking about beauty rather than observing any traditions, as do the Germans. That's a quote. And if you think about the concerto, the first music you hear, you never hear again in the rest of the piece. There's this beautiful theme, da ya da da ya da da ya da dum bum. Well, that never comes back. And after the violin comes in, and I think that's what the critic Hanslick at the premiere, one of the things he objected to, like, this was something different. This is not in the German sonata form tradition. It is in sonata form, but you never hear that first music. And Hanslick talked about the music stinking to the ear. He wrote that sometimes you see obscene pictures that stink to the eye. Tchaikovsky's violin concerto gives us for the first time the hideous notion that there can be music that stinks to the ear. And so but now it's one of the most beloved pieces. And I was so interested in sort of the genesis of the piece. And my introduction to the piece, also, I just tie it back to my Suzuki teacher. When I got to 8th or 9th grade, I was starting to lose interest. She wanted me to get a recording of the Tchaikovsky in particular. So I got a cassette tape. It was Joshua Bell in Cleveland with Ashkenazi conducting. And I would walk to school, and I had a Walkman, and I was putting that on. And I found the end of the first movement so thrilling that I remember I was always late to school, but that helped me because I would often start running with the end of the first movement, and it would help me avoid detention. As well, but it also, I fell in love with the piece, and I had never played it until I had the opportunity to play it with the Tri-County Wind Ensemble. There's a version for violin and wind ensemble that I played on Valentine's Day last year, and that's that gave me the opportunity to finally learn the piece. And then when this opportunity presented itself, I was thrilled to do it again, and I'm very excited about it.
All right. Well, that's certainly an explanation. A rather long one, but that's
sorry. That's great. Up.
Mm. I just want to make sure that we have time to get in the how to get tickets for this event. Ben.
Absolutely, the tickets are available at the door on the day of the concert at Providence College at the Smith Center for the Arts. 3 p.m. And also, they're available through our website, which is www.nabsco. It's NABSCO.org.
NABSCO.org.
Right.
All right. That's excellent. All right. We want to get to our next piece of music, and we'll be dealing with Copeland at this point. So tell us about this.
Okay, so our next piece of music is the ballet suite from Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland, which is just, like you think, an American work from 1945, from the end of the Second World War period. And it started famously as a commission from Martha Graham and her famous company, and she gave Copland a kind of vague outline. She was very into setting... to having original works created for her and her company, and she was not she wanted to respond authentically to new compositions and new works of art. So she did not focus on a scenario first. She gave him a very broad outline. We wanted to be American. We wanted to capture the spirit of you know, the pioneers, the early American vision. But not much more than that. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is because Copland, out of that, got the brilliant idea, first of all, to find an early American hymn with which to conclude the work in speaking about the vision of the founders and everything. And that is, of course, what we know as the gift to be simple, or simple gifts, the Shaker song, which is, you know, he kind of... brought that back to popularity, such that, you know, all school children learn that song, and we teach it on all the instruments, so that's one of the best known early American songs at this point. And of course, it's famously included in Appalachian Spring at the end as the kind of apotheosis of the work, and just before the beautiful prayer conclusion of the piece.
Ben, I think we have time for another piece of Copland before we take our next break.
Great. I thought the beginning would make a lot of sense for a couple of reasons. First, the excerpt we just listened to kind of gives the piece a very broad canvas, which it absolutely has, but it's not the form in which the work was originally written. The piece was played for a special concert at the Library of Congress, and actually the ballet was also given there. So it's all a miniature affair. I think the pit at the Library of Congress Theater held a piano and enough space for 12 other players, in other words, which is why I say 13 because that includes the pianist. And so that was the original instrumentation of the whole ballet that Copland conceived. And that the work in that form is still played all the time. It has a lot of freshness and vitality and originality because of that conversation, because of that
combination.
That's the word. So it didn't start out it being the grand climax kind of thing that we just heard. Copland realized that later on, he realized that it was a big hit and had a big spiritual message to it that connected with post-World War II America in a way that it very much needed. And so then he was commissioned, I think, by the New York Philharmonic to create a concert suite for full orchestra, which he did. And it still has a lot of the color of the original, but there's nothing quite like the original version. One thing which is kind of like it is the way it opens, because the full orchestra is cut down to reflect its kind of chamber origins. Only half the strings are playing, and this is where you can still hear in the full orchestra version a lot of the spirit of the original work. And another thing about that, Copland would always be very amused when people would come up to him at Tanglewood or wherever he would be, and especially if Appalachian Spring had been played, because they would say things like, I don't know how you created that, because I can smell the air in the morning dew in the Appalachian Mountains, even though I say the name of the piece is Appalachian Spring. While that is true, he had no idea that's what he was writing about when he was writing the music. Martha Graham had just given him the sort of vague scenario that I mentioned earlier, and she the actual plot of the characters and everything, and what that it was about a Shaker society in Pennsylvania in early America, that all came later. So I think it's easy to listen to it, especially when you know the story, and imagine that was how it was set out from the beginning. But the only thing he called the work, Copland called it Ballet for Martha until about 2 weeks before the premiere, and then it was decided Appalachian Spring. And the score still bears that subtitled Appalachian Spring, Ballet for Martha. That's why.
Well, there you go, the story behind the story. All right, we'll listen to that, then take a short break, and be back with more.
Thank you.
Well, as usual, time flies when you're having fun, and we've listened to a lot of music that you brought for us, Ben, and gotten a lot of information. We're going to have an opportunity to kind of recap everything. I just want you to make sure that our audience gets to hear everything you want to say.
Well, the one thing I would just want to be sure of is that people know when the next two concerts are that we have this season, and how to get tickets, and just information like that. The concert on March 5th, Sunday, March 5th, 2017, is going to feature the Beethoven Leonore Overture No. 3, which we're about to hear some of, and Jesse playing the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, and the Copland Appalachian Spring, which we just heard before the break.
And that's going to be at?
That's going to be at Providence College at the Smith Center for the Performing Arts. The tickets are available the day of the concert at the door or through our website, which is www.nabsco.org. That's N-A-B-S-C-O. For Narragansett Bay Symphony Community Orchestra, and you can find more information about us there. In addition to purchasing tickets, you can find out about our sponsors and a lot of we have a lot of information on our website, newly redone.
Excellent.
And we have one concert further this season, which will be Sunday, June 4th, at the same place, the Smith Center for the Arts at Providence College, also at 3 p.m. Both concerts are at 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoons. Which is one thing that we do to try to keep our concerts accessible to the community is to have them Sunday afternoons at a time when people can really come and families are available. We have accessible ticket prices. Our ticket prices are $15 and $5 for students and seniors, and children under 12 are free.
Wow.
And that's something we do just so that the orchestra and what we do is easily accessible to the community. And it's something I think that we service, you know, making music something which brings everybody together and serves the community and contributes something to the community is something that we share very much in common with Community Music Works. And it just so happens, not for no reason, incidentally, that we've had, including Jesse, three of our soloists recently will have been Community Music Works fellows or involved strongly with Community Music Works. Jesse, of course, as he said, has been involved for a very, very long time. The soloist, importantly, why I'm bringing this up, our soloist on June 4th will be Adrian Taylor, the cellist, who will be playing the Dvorak Cello Concerto, and the other work on that program is the Berlioz Symphony Fantastique, as we said before. And earlier, we also had Rhiannon Bennett, a violin soloist, playing Mozart with us in my first concert as music director, in fact. So this has been a very fruitful partnership just through working with all that you bring.
Yeah, I mean, we are obviously very devoted to serving the community, and I think what Community Music Works is about, I can't really encapsulate it in a nutshell, but we really believe that it's not just enough to be a performer, but it's not enough to be a teacher, but you have to be a community activist as well. And especially now, I can't think of a more important time to do that, and that music has just provided so many opportunities for our teachers, but also our students. And I've met many wonderful people through it, including the fine people in this room right here. And I'm really looking forward to this concert and continuing this partnership. If you'd like to know more about Community Music Works and what we do, you can go to our website, which is just communitymusicworks.org. But feel free to stop by anytime. It's just 1392 Westminster Street in Providence, in the West End of Providence. We love visitors, so please stop by.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, Jesse, for coming in, and a big addition to our program today. And I wish you well in the concert coming up.
And go Patriots.
All right.
Yes. There we
go. All right. And Ben, once more, I want to thank you for coming in, bringing the music, and bringing Jesse along. And we're going to go out with a Beethoven piece, right?
Right. Thank you, Mike, once again for having us. It's always a lot of fun to be with you here and talk with you. They've always, this has always been a great time to do this. The last piece we have is the piece that actually comes first on the March 5th program, and that's the Beethoven Leonore Overture No. 3. And right off the bat, I think people wonder, why does it have the number 3, and why is it the overture to an opera which is actually called Fidelio? And there's a bit. Beethoven was such a perfectionist that he wrote the overture to his only opera, which it was his only opera, by the way. He kept trying over and over and over again to get it right. It's actually a Singspiel. It has numbers that are interspersed with dialogue, which was the German form of opera most popular at the time. But Beethoven kept making the overtures too dramatic. To simplify the problem, the Lehner overtures 1 through 3 all encapsulate the story of the opera much more dramatically almost than the opera itself does. They are such compact, dramatic pieces that something about them was not successful. And I think Beethoven finally settled on the final overture he wrote, which is what we know today as the Fidelio overture, is much more of a mere curtain raiser. I don't mean to sound like I'm dismissing the piece, but what it does is actually just set the scene for the drama to open of the opera. And so in that sense, it's more integrated. But so that is, I think, of course, the way he meant it to be. But we still have these other three overtures. The most famous is this Leonore number 3 overture. And it is very, very dramatic. It opens with a very long introduction. It kind of depicts in the introduction the steps down to the dungeon where the hero of the story is being imprisoned. And you definitely hear that in the music. And it has a dark, just like being in a dungeon, but with hope. Always hope with Beethoven. And then the overture proper starts with a famous theme in C major, the key of resolution and order in the world, and proceeds through some things which show up in the opera, some themes. But the distinguishing feature, the most important thing that you sort of notice on the surface is that the overture includes 2 offstage trumpet calls. This is a connection to Mahler, which I want to make in a moment. But the trumpet call represents the rescuer of the hero of the opera approaching. And so the first one is very far away. There's a little interlude. And the next one is much closer. And he realizes that, salvation is coming. And this is in the middle of the overture where the development takes place. After the first part is stated again, there's a big flurry at the end when he's set free, which the violinists and we've been working very hard to perfect. It's very, very hard to play. It's very, very fast. It's one of the truly daring things he wrote. And the overture comes to a brilliant, joyful conclusion that only Beethoven could write, because everything is set right and love wins the day. I'm not doing a great job telling the story of the opera at the moment because it isn't that germane to the overture here, except to capture the typical Beethovenian traits of fate and joy overcoming adversity. The reason I mentioned Mahler is the offstage trumpet calls became, of course, Mahler's symphonies, which we play a lot in Nabisco, or will, have a lot of that kind of thing. This was a favorite piece of Mahler's, and when Mahler performed Fidelio, the opera, he would play Beethoven's Fidelio overture as he wrote it, but he would often play the Leonore overture number 3 before the third act as a sort of overture to the third act, which is where the drama gets resolved, and that was one of his favorite things to do. And it's hearing Mahler backward through Beethoven is an interesting exercise because there are some Mahlerian traits in this Leonore overture number 3. And if I just say that, I think you'll hear them. That's probably enough.
All right.
About that. But so here is then. Some of the Leonore Overture number 3, which we're going to play on March 5th.
All right, we will listen to a portion of that, and we'll see the rest of you next time on Conducting Conversations. Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.